Good morning. It's always so nerve-wracking to talk amongst Bible scholars that you are. Because you are. Don't you consider yourself Bible scholars? You should. Okay. The title of our little talk today is Blessed and Highly Favored. Let's go ahead and go. I just printed out the reading, so you don't have to turn to it if you don't want to. But we're going to go read Luke 1, 26 through 38. Now in the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a city of Galilee named Nazareth, to a virgin betrothed to a man whose name was Joseph of the house of David. The virgin's name was Mary. And having come in, the angel said to her,
"Do you want me to?" Yes, I do.
Thank you. Oh, you have the text, Laura. Sorry, you walked right past me, too.
Sorry. Thank you.
Okay. And having come in, the angel said to her, "Rejoice, highly favored one. The Lord is with you. Blessed are you among women." But when she saw him, she was troubled at his saying and considered what manner of greeting this was. Then the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you will conceive in your womb and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus. He will be great, and will be called the Son of the Highest. And the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end." Then Mary said to the angel, "How can this be, since I do not know a man?" And the angel answered and said to her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Highest will overshadow you. Therefore also the Holy One who is to be born will be called the Son of God. Now indeed Elizabeth, your relative, has also conceived a son in her old age." Excuse me. "And this is now the sixth month for her who was called barren. For with God nothing will be impossible." Then Mary said, "Behold the maidservant of the Lord. Let it be to me according to your word." And the angel departed from her. Let's go back to verse 28. Read that one more time. "And having come in, the angel said to her, 'Rejoice, highly favored one. And the Lord is with you. Blessed are you among women.'" Obviously, Mary is the ultimate blessed and highly favored woman. So, how many of you consider yourself blessed? You don't have to raise your hand, but if you want to, you can. How many of you feel highly favored? This is what we're going to talk about today. Recently, I had the opportunity to listen to Dr. Bertrice Berry. Do you know her? Well, I'm secretly her new best friend. She doesn't know she lives in Georgia. But we're soulmates. She just doesn't know it. But in a secular meeting. But her presentation was full of spiritual and faith-based content. So I was a little... It seemed like we were a little bit out of our element at this meeting. But she is a sociologist, a comedian, an author, a mentor, a mother, and I think she might be a preacher. She told the story of the time when she was applying for her doctorate, Jean, and was set to present her dissertation to a committee panel. The older ladies in her congregation, whom she calls the blessed and highly favored sisters, got wind of her application and, of course, wanted to support her. Y'all know the type. You are the type. They wanted to support her. Self-admittedly, Dr. Berry at this time was still struggling with her angry and defiant ego that stemmed from unforgiveness in her own life. And she really didn't want these blessed and highly favored sisters to intrude on this very important day. So when the blessed and highly favored sisters asked what time she was going for her that PD thing, she told them it started at 11 when actually it started at 10. In her own words, she said, "No one thought to tell me old people show up early." They were there at 8:30 with food. They fed the committee and encouraged them to give her little dis whatever that thing was, her doctorate, to their friend that they obviously highly favored. I have on my notes, pause and take a deep breath. Isn't that a cute story? And it's a true story. So while she was saying, kept talking about these blessed and highly favored women, I thought, that sounds a little blasphemous to me, because she was just saying it so flippantly until we started really listening. But I couldn't remember where this biblical phrase came from. So I wrote it down. When I got the chance, I Googled it and was connected and looked it up and found it was connected to Mary, the mother of our Lord. I thought, wow, can we call others and ourselves by this title, Highly Blessed, Highly Favored and Blessed. Thus comes our lesson for today. Let's go back to verse 28. Rejoice, highly favored one, because the Lord is with you. Why? Because the Lord is with you. Therefore, we can be called highly favored, can't we? Because as a Christian woman, as Christian women, the Lord is with us. And there are several verses that teach us this. Matthew 1:23, Behold, virgin child, the virgin shall be with child and shall bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which translated means God with us. And I don't have all your verses in there because I went back and tweaked. But Romans 8:31, What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who is against us? 1 Peter 3:18. For Christ also suffered once for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive by the Spirit. That results in rejoicing and favoritism. Being highly favored means Jesus is with us, God is with us, and for us. Continuing in verse 28, Blessed are you among women. Mary's blessing came to her because she had been chosen to be the earthly vessel to carry our Savior. Therefore, she is and was blessed among women and will be honored throughout the ages, in her own words. As children of God, we are chosen, therefore allowing us to wear the title blessed. 1 Peter 2:8-10. We'll just read verse 9 and 10. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. What kind of light? A marvelous light. That's more of that blessed beings that we are. For once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. You had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. 1 John 3:1, See how great a love the Father has bestowed on us that we would be called children of God, and such we are. So, yeah, I guess we can call ourselves blessed and highly favored. Then I have several other verses to go with this, but I won't take the time to read. If you want them, I can give them to you. But one I wanted to read, Colossians 3:12. So as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. So I think we've established we can be rightly called highly favored and blessed. Highly favored and blessed because God set it up that way. A couple of necessities come along with this title. We can read the Blessed Beatitudes as a reminder, but let us continue with our text. Verse 36. So a couple of things. One, blessed knowing that with God all things are possible. Forgiveness is possible. Hope, faith, love. God's blessings are abundant to those who follow him. Like Mary and Elizabeth, sisters in Christ are given by God as blessings to aid with the seemingly impossibilities that sometimes rear its head in life, in our lifetimes. We are blessed when we encourage one another and lift each other up. God also blesses us with things like provisions, protection from the evil one. I love to say that. I'm protected from the evil one. And that list is long. No, but most of all, we're blessed with salvation. Believing that all things are possible with God takes believing it, truly believing it, and letting it be in his time. And two, let's read verse 38. Mary says, and I've just condensed it, but you can read the whole thing. Mary says, let it be. Mary accepted this blessing in high favoritism. Mary was blessed through her choice to accept God's will for her. Another Mary chose the Lord in Luke 10:41. But the Lord answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and bothered about so many things, but only one thing is necessary, for Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. When we submit to God's will, we too are blessed and highly favored. So let your prayers be, let it be, Lord. Quickly, we'll read verse, do we have time?
Yep.
Okay. We're going to read verse 39 through 56. It's your next text handout. Now Mary arose in those days and went into the hill country with haste to a city of Judah and entered the house of Zacharias and greeted Elizabeth. And it happened when Elizabeth heard the greeting of Mary that the babe leaped in her womb, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit. Then she spoke out with a loud voice and said, Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. But why is this granted to me, that the mother of my Lord should come to me? For indeed, as soon as the voice of your greeting sounded in my ears, the babe leaped in my womb for joy. Blessed is she who believed, for there will be a fulfillment of those things which were told her from the Lord. Elizabeth was truly blessed and favored, having a child in her old age. So there we have it. What a wonderful set of beliefs. Oh, hang on. I skipped something. I forgot to read 46. Okay. Then the Song of Mary. Mary said back to Elizabeth, "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit has rejoiced in God my Savior. For he has regarded the lowly state of his maidservant. For behold, henceforth all generations will call me blessed. For he who is mighty has done great things for me, and holy is his name. And his mercy is on those who fear him from generation to generation. He has shown strength with his arm. He has scattered the proud in the imagination of their hearts. He has put down the mighty from their thrones and exalted the lowly. He has filled the hungry with good things, and the rich he has sent away empty. He has helped his servant Israel in remembrance of his mercy, as he spoke to our fathers, to Abraham, and to his seed forever." And Mary remained with her about 3 months and returned to her house. So there we have it. What a wonderful set of beliefs Mary sings about and praises God about for his blessings upon her, and gave and glorified God and did not glorify herself. But there is a plan, the higher calling. Accept it daily. I know all of you do. And remember, you're blessed and highly favored. God's goodness is always around us, and it is our job to stop and appreciate his blessings and favoritism. If you get a chance, read Psalms 105, 1 through 6. The end. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I do think it's easy to forget as we go through daily life how blessed we are. I wouldn't say we take it for granted as much as we get used to it. And we know that we're blessed, and we know that we're grateful, but sometimes we forget to focus on that. Thank you.
I don't know. I'm sure you remember Stan wrote in his bulletins about the Beatitudes. Mm-hmm. And the blessed is superior, and we're superior in that, what Mary says here at the end of all the blessings that we have. And I thought this.
And it's not because we're superior.
No.
It's because
no.
God has granted us.
Yes. Thanks
all
he's
these,
given us.
These wonderful things.
For us.
Good lesson, Tracy. Thank you. Okay, so in the other lesson this morning, we're going to talk about honoring your husband in your marriage. Now, I wanted to look at this from just a little different viewpoint. We have a lot of teaching on submission, often, and I think we all have a very good understanding of what that means. But I want to go a little further than that, because it is possible to submit and still have an unhappy marriage. So let's explore a little bit. Well, that didn't work. Let me get my PowerPoint back here. Maybe I just don't know how to do this anymore because it's been so long since I did. Look at it won't go up there. If I can't get this mouse to do what I want it to, I'll just have to stand over there and change things. See if it works that way. Okay. So we can't have this kind of lesson without talking about submission, because we're commanded to submit to Jesus, to God, to our fellow brethren, and to our husbands. And it's a very specific commandment. Okay, I didn't touch anything. I wasn't anywhere near it. This could be challenging today. So we're told in Hebrews 13:17 to obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourself, for they watch for your souls. There's a reason we're told to submit. It's not to glorify the people to whom we submit. It's because they're watching out for us as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief. Why would they do it with grief? Laura, why would they do it with grief?
Because the wife could maybe be married.
If we gave them grief. for that is unprofitable for you. It's not a good idea to kick against the pricks. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body, in Ephesians. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. Now, I think it's difficult to find a way around that one. But I guarantee you the people in the world try to. They say, why would you do that? He can't tell you what to do. You know, you're not the boss of me. It's like a five-year-old. But when we understand, and this lesson really isn't on submission, we're going to move past it, but when we understand the peace and order that it puts in our lives, when all of us submit to whom we are required to submit, and everybody, you know, everybody, kids think, I'm going to be grown up and be my own boss. How many of you have more bosses than you had when you were a kid? Lots more people telling you what you can and can't do. So what I wanted to look at was, how do we submit? How do we have a happy marriage without imposing what we think our role should be on our husband? So what does submit mean? Does it mean agreeing with everything he says and does? We do everything he mentions? Honey, I wish I had some fresh guava juice, you know. Or is it about recognizing his leadership in the home and in our family? Mother?
You gotta go back a little further to start with it. You have to choose somebody that you can.
Yes, you do.
Do that. Mm-hmm.
And when you make a mistake on that, it's a very long-lasting mistake.
Yes.
But it is about recognizing his headship and his leadership and his requirement to take care of us. So, yes, we are to be submissive. But let's not forget why. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the husband hath not power over his own body, but the wife. The wife has a lot of control. In My Big Fat Greek Wedding, the mama said, the man is the head, but the wife is the neck. She makes it go. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself, Ephesians 5:33. And this goes back to what you're saying, Mother. If you have chosen wisely, he loves you as he loves his own self. He's not going to do anything damaging, hurtful. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with him according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. 1 Peter 3:7. The husband says, is told, this is the way you live so that your prayers aren't hindered. Now, Roger was looking at this last night and he said, that looks like a pretty sturdy vessel. It doesn't look weaker to me. I said, it's a first century vessel. It's the best I could do. What does it mean, weaker vessel? That's four sermons worth of stuff. But what's your opinion?
More easily breakable.
More fragile in some ways.
That was the big word I was going to use.
In spirit. In your heart. Men can blow a lot of things off and not even hear what was said. And we tend to hear every bit of it, plus some words we add.
We have more of a nurturing.
We do.
Character.
More of an emotional
yes.
approach to life.
I also think you could apply the roles that we have here. The woman's role is secondary mm-hmm. to her husband, which would you could say would be a weaker vessel because she is secondary.
So, honoring him. Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, 1 Peter 3 and 6. Now, I doubt that we have to actually use that term. In today's world, it's not the vernacular that we use, but certainly respectful and kind. We're going to get into some of that. And let the wife see that she reverence her husband. Reverence. That's a pretty big word. Most of us tend to reserve reverence for our attitude about God. It's very specific. So, what does all that mean? And how can we live that life? Or
I was going to say, but it's God who puts him in that position.
Absolutely.
And so by showing reverence to her husband, we're showing reverence
right.
to God.
We're obeying what we're supposed to do. And it's very clear. It's just, I wonder why that text box was supposed to go away when it went to the slideshow. Learning all kinds of things this morning. So.
What version is that?
King James.
Mine says respect.
This is the old King James. Building trust. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil in Proverbs. What does that mean? Trust in her. How? How would he trust in his wife?
Well, we run the household and use up his money, and
it's a very impactful job. If it's not done well, you can be the ruin of the home quite easily. I was watching some TV show, Dr. Phil maybe, about this wife who's just spending money like crazy, and he's going, we don't have that much money. And it's one of those very simple things that quit spending money. But some people don't know how to do that or choose not to do that. They know how. So, okay, so in the running of the household, he trusts in her. Else?
The children.
Yeah. Bringing up the children. And something we doesn't even come into our brains as Christians, but faithfulness. There's not going to be other men involved. Even very close friends can be disruptive to a marriage if it's not...
And children.
And children. Yes, that's true.
She encourages him to...
She encourages him. So there are a lot of ways that we can build the trust that our husband needs to have in us in order to be able to treat us the way he's supposed to treat us. If he's having to treat us like a child that he has to corral, then a lot of those other things are going to be a lot harder for him. You know, he shouldn't have to bring up a wife. We're to have the desire for our husband. Unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow. Thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. It's that balance. But there are the husband and wife were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. There are a lot of people, a lot of women, who say, oh, that sex thing, that was a long time ago. I don't have to show him that kind of physical love and attention. But what we know about men is, yeah, you do. It's a need for men. It is a need for women, but men tend to be more sexual. And for us to ignore that part of their personality is wrong. It's wrong. So I don't think that's so much of a problem for young girls who hormones are roaring through their body, but maybe it becomes a little bit more of a problem as we get older. But we cannot ignore the physical aspect, even if that physical aspect is just holding hands or a pat on the arm as we walk past, something to connect physically, because we're told to have a desire for our husband. Now, here's the real part I want to talk about. How do we do this? How do we live this life together with someone for all these many years and be careful that we don't supplant his duties as a husband? He's been given a job. And one of them is to leave his father and mother. So I'm in the midst of this one. Y'all all know that. Kate's probably going to move somewhere. We can't pin down where that somewhere might be. And I don't want her to go. I don't want the baby to go. I told Kate she could go. But what if he's supposed to leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife? What if our attitude as women makes that impossible for him to cleave to us? What if we say, I'm not going, or I'll go, but you'll be sorry, or any of these other things that creates a situation where he cannot cleave to his wife? I think in this particular verse, it's talking more about his ability to show himself able to leave and take care of her. But certainly the wife can be a big problem. And Kate's not the problem. I'm the problem. She says, if he'll just pick where he wants to move, I'll go there. That's our current problem. We don't know what state we're talking about. But if any provide not for his own, and specifically those of his own house, he's denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. So tell me what you think about stay-home daddies. And mama's out earning all the cash. Does that conflict with this, Laura?
I have my cousin. She's a year older than me, but I remember when she got married right out of college, and she's very bright. She made it very high, close to six figure. And then she gone up to her company. Well, she just recently got a divorce, and we were talking. We're both where my dad is. She went up there when I was on vacation, and we were talking. She has one son, and when she had the son, he quit work and stayed home and raised her child or whatever. And she did this. She goes, well, he didn't want to hug anymore. He didn't want to do all this stuff or whatever. And she makes a very high six-figure salary. She's got a ton of responsibility and all this stuff. And we talked about it, and I said, well, your roles are kind of flopped there. And she kind of looked at me, and she's like, I got the, it's like the woman version of a male chauvinist bag and all this stuff or whatever. And I said, a woman is generally more nurturing, more caring, or whatever. And her son, but I said, first of all, I think you, we call it demasculated him on our
That's
and it. I said, did he feel that? And she goes, yeah, he did. But then he just kind of had to live with it. He liked the money and all this stuff or whatever. And I was like, do you not see, though, from that point down, you took away his in that family. And you did. And they were, but you can't see it. And God has put us in certain positions. And I'm not saying the woman couldn't work or anything
right.
like that. But there is a thing, I think, you would say a pride. I mean, if you look at even in the animal kingdom, you have the male takes care of that. The lions, the female hunts, but that man, if he covers that pride or whatever. And I think in the family, when you do that, I said, when you take away that role from the man, and if you take away his responsibilities or whatever,
emasculate.
You take away that from him, and I think that's a natural thing that God gives them. But I think as a woman, you have to, every woman here knows that woman, you are the neck. You don't get all the credit, but you do. You are that backbone that supports them or whatever. And we each have our place or whatever in that. Jim goes to work, I'm allowed to stay home. I appreciate that.
Right.
But there's no doubt about it. In our household, if I died, he'd be so in trouble. He would have no clue.
Well, that's because he trusts in you,
yes,
as he's supposed to do.
We each have our place in that.
Yeah.
But I think it does mess with things.
Well, I agree with exactly what you said. If I think we have plenty of examples that it's okay for a woman to work, to earn money, to be a part of that. But to take it where he is no longer providing for the family. Because the money's seductive. I think you're asking for trouble, just like you said. Because men generally, big generalization, don't want to be home all day with the kids. They might want to be home one day with the kids, but not every day doing the things that women are more inclined to do. Chris, talk loud.
Okay, I'll try to. I was in a situation like that where my ex-husband, and he was given, I would work even before I had Caitlin, and he would be at home taking care of the house, and everything was fine until I was pregnant with Caitlin, and then he went out to a strip club with the sponsor from the NAAA meeting, supposedly for an interview, and it came back, and he had time on his hands to run around and do a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't necessary. Even if he did take care of the house better, and he would tease me because he said I folded fitted sheets like I had clothes, but the time that he had on his hands, it didn't work out because they are sexual in nature.
Well, and God gave us roles. He said a man's supposed to provide for his own. And if he doesn't, or feels like he isn't, and you know, there's been not so much anymore because, you know, we've changed, we've progressed.
I did that.
Yeah. There was a time not too many years ago when a man said, "My wife won't work. I would never want my wife to work," because he was proud of taking care of his family. And that was, you know, 50 years ago, not very long. And now it's, well, of course she'll work. I mean, how many young couples do you know that don't assume that the wife will also go to work? Not that there's anything wrong with her doing it, but there is something wrong if she's supplanting his duties, what he's required to do as a husband. So it's all over, and we're at the judgment day, and the Lord says to him, "You didn't take care of your family." And he says to her, "You didn't let him." I think it's something we don't think about anymore, and we need to think about it. Again, I don't think there's anything wrong with a woman helping financially and being a part of that process. But as he's the one providing for his family. And as long as that's happening, I think we're good.
And I think we need to watch. And, you know, we want our children to get a college education.
Right.
But we need to teach them this along with that, because so many young people these days, mid-20s to mid-30s, are so career-oriented. Mm-hmm. And as, I know it's not quite there yet, but as the workplace goes more towards equal pay for women and things like that, then they're seeking more those higher roles and stuff. And, you know, career is good, but not with a detriment to the family.
Right. And you have to think about those careers that take you away from family. There are things women can do that still allow them to be the keepers at home. I'm not sure being the vice president of a big company is one of those. I never was, so I'm not sure. Mother?
Well, if the woman can remember that no matter what she's doing to help with finance, the husband is still ahead of the house.
Right.
Puts money in the bank.
Right.
And it's family money.
Right.
It can't be your money.
No. And I've heard women say that. What he earns is our money, what I earn is my money. Really? How selfish, just on a plain personal selfish level. One of the things, you know, it's a second marriage, and things are different when you marry for the second time. But one thing we knew right away was if we were going to join our lives, we were going to join our money. And we had lots of people telling us, don't do that. And I'm thinking, well, first of all, he has more money than I do, so, you know, it's a good thing for me. It might be a bad thing for him. But I'm not going to trust my life with somebody that I don't trust my money with.
I just started to think, what's more important, money or person?
Right.
You know?
So, Laura?
Two things. You said that's something like my son Jimmy went through. His wife came from a very dysfunctional family. She had a really big odds about, oh, no, you have yours, and I'll have mine or whatever. And it was a really tough thing or whatever. But we looked at our society the way we are right now or whatever. Everything is, we do, we're always putting the cart before the horse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in everything we do, people would sleep with somebody, but they wouldn't, oh, I'm not going to marry them, or all these things where we're way out of things. But something that I've seen in with Jim's sister or whatever, she went through a lot of marital problems, but she would always call her mom. And her mom would be like, well, you can come back home. And that was the worst thing because she didn't deal with her problem.
Right.
She would just call mom, and mom would always take her side, which was not always good. And that's not, I mean, the men need to be raised to be the head of the household, and women need to look to their husband.
I remember one time when I was very young. I had been married but a few months. And Randy and I got into some kind of a net. And we were living in Lubbock. And I went out the door, slammed it, got in the car, and thought, now where am I going to go? Because if I try to go home, Mother will send me back. And so I just went back in the house. And
I know a funny story about that. I know we're not here for a funny story, but the man had a son, and he got married. And he and his wife were, the young man and his wife were not doing well. So he called the girl's father and said, he was going to bring her home. They were not happy. And the father says, No, you can't bring her home. You took her for your wife, and you can't bring her home.
Yours. Well, before Kate and Jason got married, Jason asked me what my return policy was, and I said, none. There is no return policy. You say I do, and you did.
This young man was so surprised. Her father wouldn't take his daughter back.
Nope.
Shortly after my brother married, I don't know, they hadn't been married just a few months, and they lived right behind my parents. They went and came over to the house, and I don't know how old I was. I guess I was in high school. He came over and he'd call him that, it was fat and everything. And I just remember my mother says, "You're married now, you get back home and settle it."
Yep. I think one of the hardest jobs I have is being the mother-in-law I know I should be. Because I really, really want to support my children, but I want to stay out of their lives. And that's a tough balance to walk. And I'm not very good at hiding my opinions, so a lot, you'll see a lot of holes in my tongue. Okay, so it's very specific. If you don't provide for your own, worse than an infidel. And we as women have to keep it in mind. And if it means we drive older cars. I was watching Dr. Phil yesterday. I love Dr. Phil most of the time. And this man, 37 years old, was married. And his mother didn't like his wife. Wanted her to be gone, out of his life. And mom paid a lot of the bills. Bought him a Mercedes. And this man actually sat there and said, "Well, you know, we'd have to live in a much smaller house, and we wouldn't." And Dr. Phil's going, "And? What's the problem there?" So, anyway, I think it's something we don't consider enough. That's my personal opinion on that one. Oh, we already did that.
Well, that's how they grow. You grow when you're separate. Yeah. That's when you.
Now, maybe a harder one for the women. Not supplanting his duties as a father. He has duties prescribed by God in being a father. He's supposed to invite instruction, Proverbs 4:1. He has to correct, Hebrews 12:9, and chasten, same thing, Hebrews 12:7. Does this mean women aren't supposed to do any of this?
We're with them more than they are.
We're supposed to be in agreement.
Right, and we can't leave a four-year-old unchastened, you know, saying, "Wait till your dad gets home,"
yeah,
kind of thing. But the fathers have the responsibilities for correcting and instructing children. We have another slide on the same thing, so we'll get there. Extorted. Most kids don't have enough money to extort. Exhorted and comforted and charged the children. Comforted the children. Dads don't just walk away when their child is in distress. They're to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And they comfort and make sure they're not discouraged. All of these are God-given responsibilities to the father. How do we obstruct that sometimes?
My Brad says, "Well, Tracy, I treat these kids just like they're mine."
Who said that?
Brad.
I'm like, "Oh."
Carol?
I think a big thing is if we don't like the way it was done, bringing it up in front of the children.
In front of the children. I assume that in 68 mother years of marriage, 60 whatever, they may have had a disagreement. But I guarantee you, we didn't hear it. We did not hear it. And you talk about a united front. I made the mistake once in my life of asking Daddy something after Mother said no. I learned that lesson really well.
And I think that says it all, a united front.
Yes.
When you say, how do we support our husbands as being father? And I think that that's major.
It is. It absolutely is. And how can we take it away from them? How can we do something that takes it away from them? Discussing it in front of the kids. Chris?
If say you did like my parents, and there were things they didn't agree on, and they actually coin tossed over it, and it was very confusing growing up because...
Sure.
Some of the siblings were allowed to do stuff that the others weren't because you were to revert back to the one that was in charge of you.
and they completely left it out of each other's hands.
And you keeping know. Secrets, too.
Keeping secrets.
You say don't tell your dad or don't yeah. tell your mom. I think that's another
thing. I had a friend regularly growing up who her mother would take her shopping, bring home very expensive clothing at the time from Neiman Marcus, which was the place to shop, you know, if you have a lot of money. Put them in the closet, say don't tell your daddy. And then later when they'd wear it, oh, we've had it forever. And it was a plan. It was a scheme. And I knew Dad, and I think he'd have probably been okay with knowing. But hiding things, scheming, or I think maybe one of the most destructive and maybe one of the most common, Dad disciplines. Mom doesn't like the way it's done. And she tells the kid, well, I think your dad was a little harsh. We have to do what he says, but I don't think it was the right thing. Talk about undermining. And they don't. I think those women don't think they're undermining because they've said we have to obey. But it's discounting it. And what about that whole wait till your father gets home thing?
That would have been funny in my house because Jim was gone for like 3 months.
Yeah. They would have loved that.
Yeah.
I wasn't waiting for that.
No.
But they dread their father coming.
They dread their father. They don't have the kind of relationship with him that he has. And the poor guy walks into a situation he didn't know anything about, and he says, spank this kid, he's driving me crazy. It's not fair. Yeah. It's not fair.
She never was spanked by her dad but once.
Scared me to death. Never did it again.
My dad used to say, you take care of my mom, you take care of the girls, and I'll take care of the boy. And that was pretty much the way it was.
Well, the point is, we can, as women, interfere with their God-given responsibility to exhort, comfort, instruct, chasten, bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. What about women who, maybe their husband doesn't want to go to church that morning, and they're just okay with that? No, that's all right. I would still not say you say anything in front of the children. But don't we have a responsibility to come back to them and say, but you have a job. It's your job. And that's conflict, and I don't like conflict very much, so it's difficult to do those things sometimes.
It's very good to be calm about things. I remember one time when your cousin was living with us, and she got provoked at me, and she, after she got greedy, she went in her room and closed the door and put things in there. She was not going to go to church. She didn't know. So your dad didn't say a word. But when he got through eating, he knocked on her door. And he said, hey, we'll be leaving for church at 7.
You need to be ready.
Be ready. And that was all I had to do.
Well, one thing, Daddy was always sparing with his comments like that. So when he said something, it was kind of like, oh, yeah. Okay, better do that.
I wish I could be more that way.
I'm trying to learn from him.
I still try to be that way.
Brent's that way.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to say it. They know it.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
oh, yeah. And I think we as women tend to be that way.
Yeah.
You know, say it 5 times.
It's gonna be trouble.
Daddy says once, and it happens.
One of my favorite things in the Bible is, quiet and gentle spirit, and I say that to myself. Quiet and gentle. Quiet.
I say that too, Rita, and then I go to Ecclesiastes and says, "There's a time for everything." We can fit every need, can't we?
But the old mom's been done away with.
I think we are required not to dishonor our husband in public. I think this is a big problem in today's world. A virtuous woman is a crown to her husband, but she that maketh ashamed is as rottenness in his bones. And her husband, this one you have to stretch a little bit, but her husband's known in the gates where he sits with the elders of the land. I don't think he meant he's known for having an awful wife. He's known for his scholarliness and his kindness and his wisdom.
And husbands want to be so proud of their wives.
We do.
And when we take that away,
rottenness in his bones.
That's a grief.
Yes.
It grieves.
Yes. Yes.
And there's a whole lot of ways to do that.
We're going to talk about some of those.
Every time I see women, and I have seen all ages with their blouses down to here,
right,
their bellies showing,
right,
and
they're exposing things that are meant for their husband.
Husband, yeah.
And,
I always want to walk up to him and say, my husband is with me, and I really don't want him seeing your stuff.
Well, we were going into a restaurant while we were on our last trip, and there was this little girl in leggings, and she was maybe 21 or so and had a short blouse, and Roger was walking behind me. I said, close your eyes, I'll guide you.
Yeah.
I don't want you looking at me.
And then there's just downright arguing in public.
Oh, arguing in public. Terrible thing. Terrible thing. But here's a couple of examples, and we're going to get some more from y'all. Lunch with the girls, and they start complaining about their husbands, and you join in. Even though it's little stuff. And the PTA sign up or whatever, and you say, oh, my husband could not do that. We better get someone else.
Just help them.
What?
Well, we were at lunch the other day, so I want to know if we complained about husbands.
So those are small things. What are some others? Like you said, arguing in public, being dressed inappropriately. What are some other things where you dishonor, where it's possible to dishonor your husband in public?
Being loud.
Drawing attention. Yeah. Most men don't want that. What if he has corrected a child and you decide to fix it?
No.
You didn't like what he did, so no. You're out in public and you're going to fix it.
Don't do that anymore. No, I don't
correct. I was on a trip with Kate a while back when she was little, not recently. But it was that sentiment was growing, you know, that you're not to spank your children. We were at church on this trip and she had met some new friends and she didn't want to leave. She was 7 or so. And I said, Kate, it's time for us to go. No, and I said, honey, there are places in this world that I can't spank you, but right here in this parking lot, these people will make a circle around me and go, go, mom, go, mom, get in the car. She did. Anything else? What about trashy behavior? What if you're out speaking in a way that you shouldn't speak, using language you shouldn't use? Now, people say, well, it's a big world. They don't know me anyway. Well, you don't know.
The Lord knows you all of that.
That's
time.
Right.
Yes.
Or just the gossiping, if that's what you're known for.
Mm-hmm.
Those things.
So the last thing you want is for your husband to hear somebody say, she's always talking about somebody.
Or causing dissension.
Causing dissension. So are these examples of honoring? Or is it just better to remember that we all have faults and warts? And maybe it's the time we say out loud, my husband is a wonderful Christian man and I'm madly in love.
And when you say that out loud, it takes people's breath away.
It does. Mm-hmm. And then some
and
of them are...
it's a teaching moment.
Yeah, some of them are going to make fun of you.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
And others are going to go, oh, maybe that's true. And as I've said 1,000 times, it just makes you look foolish for marrying him if he's really all that bad. You just made a bad choice. Before I married Roger, people would say, how's Roger? I'd say, he's wonderful and perfect. And there was this one lady at church in Bastrop, it just made her so mad she could hardly stand it. She'd say, no one's perfect. And I said, oh, well, he is. And she'd say, well, when you get married, you'll find out no one's perfect. And I just... our definitions of perfect
right.
are different.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was my standard answer.
I heard a song this morning. I've never heard it. It said... if you live with the love of your life, live life with love.
Oh.
I thought that was such a
that is nice.
Phrase.
That's very nice.
I need that. I couldn't hear.
If you live with the love of your life,
live life with love.
Live life with love. Yeah. That's to me else.
Or live a long life.
Yeah. Use your manners. We're told in Proverbs it's better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. The other one's worse. A continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. Drip, drip, drip. Constant poking, nagging. Calm yourself before speaking. If I'm not saying I'm always good at it, but I have learned this. I know this to be true and I work at it.
Some men, Christian or not, will not stick around if
right.
that's the case.
That's right.
Because who wants to live in that atmosphere?
Right.
And sometimes we can say, you can't blame them.
person that's doing the nagging is in as much trouble as the person that's having to listen to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you love somebody, do you really want them to feel like they're in Chinese water torture?
Yeah. Are they dread coming home?
Oh, right.
Yes.
Speak as kindly as you would to a stranger on the street. Be straightforward. Don't make him guess what you're thinking. Men don't like that at all. They do not like that. Roger will even tell me, he said, and I'm working real hard on this, but it's so hard for me. He said, if you want me to get something for you, you know, like I want you to find something in the other room for me, I will start out with go upstairs, look in the drawer. He said, first, tell me what we're looking for. Do that first.
And then tell me.
Then give me the instructions. He said, because it makes me crazy halfway through. You've given me 15 steps, and I don't know what we're looking for. So they don't like to guess. I'm trying really hard on that one.
It's like when you Google for driving instructions, there's a place where you can take off the first 4, 5, or 6 steps.
Right.
Top and bottom.
Right. So that you just
know that area.
Because they tell me, turn left onto Clear Lake Road. Well, that's out of my driveway, and I know I have to do that. I'm already sure of that one. Clue them in about what's going on in your life. And I think as we stay married longer, this tends to be more of a problem. We make plans, and then we say, oh, by the way. Which is probably okay for most things, but just the respect of asking, of saying, does this work in your schedule? Does this sound like fun to you? If it doesn't sound like fun, will you go just because I want to? You know, any of those things. But not just drop things on him as if it's your right to plan his life. And I know I have a problem with that. Because he says I make plans and laminate them, and then he finds out. Look through a different lens. Look at this man in a different way. He never puts his shoes away. I am blessed that this man shares my home. Here's some shoes. I'll put them away. Because it's really not that big deal.
No, but that's a big deal to finally come to that understanding.
Oh, yes.
It's just so liberating for everyone involved.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah.
And I use shoes because that's our issue at home.
Yeah, I usually win shoes. That award.
Why can't he ever be home for dinner on time? How about I'll give the kids a snack and he won't feel so rushed to get home because kids aren't going to be crying and screaming. I know that Daddy got off early. He went to work early. He got off early. He was home by about 4:30. And I'm impatient to see him. And we ate dinner very early because he went to work early, which was great as a kid because then I had the whole evening to do whatever I wanted to do. But every now and then he'd be a little bit late and I'm going, when is he going to get home? And my mother always said to me, there's no place he'd rather be than here. He will be here the moment he can get here. Especially when it's
here. You go.
You can't see that very well, but it says, remember that never and ever are very, very long times. When you use those statements, they're accusatory. If you say things like, I wish you could be home earlier. I know it's hard for you to get away. But when you say, you never get home on time. Well, automatically, that's not true. It's just the luck of the draw. He's going to be home on time sometimes. And it sounds accusatory, and people get defensive.
So we need to try and remember to turn the negative into positive.
Right, right.
He's got a job.
And aren't we glad? Yeah.
Jimmy will say, like you were saying there, you never do something, or you always say
right.
this, or and then I get...
defensive.
Very personal about it,
right.
and that's one of our worst problems.
Yeah.
I just need to say, well, that's okay.
Well, it's not a true statement, is what gets to us, because I don't always do whatever it is. Sometimes I'm going to do it right. So it hits almost everybody that same way. You get very defensive when people say always, never, ever.
Yeah. Just like taking a test. They tell you the answer is never...
It's wrong.
It's wrong.
Praise. Don't flatter. Different things. Yard looks great. Yard looks great. I know you didn't really feel like doing that today. So it even means more to me that you're willing to do it. This is one thing we use with young children all the time. The difference between praise and encouragement. and in that case, the praise is kind of useless, the flattering. What a great building you made out of the blocks. Or, wow, that one's bigger than your last one. What did you do differently? Because just that empty, great job. You know, I teach some online classes, and this particular university has a whole lot of rules. And one of the things they say, which any good teacher should know, is don't just say to every person, good job, great job, you did fine. Those empty phrases that kids just eventually don't hear them. And we can do that if we're not careful and take for granted some of the things they do.
And Jean, they need that every time. If
they do.
I don't know, notice the yard being mowed. Jimmy undoubtedly says, well, did you know I'm mowed?
Yeah.
And so, I need to do it every time.
Well, I think really we need acknowledgments for the job. I mean, I make Roger come look at the linen closet when I clean it out. And he goes, great, good.
He can care less, but it's there, yeah, right?
But he smiles and nods. And that's right. I don't see any reason they have to clean linen closets. The things are straight, you fold them, you put it in, it should stay straight.
Just like we want to be known.
Yes.
When I'm at, stay at home, whatever, it may not be really important or whatever to them, but you want to be recognized for your
contribution. For your accomplishments, sure.
Yeah.
So even something like you do a fantastic job at work, or I know you're doing, yes, that's a great thing to say. But maybe sometimes you need to go a little further and say, I know it's hard. I know that you don't want to get up and go every day. But I so appreciate what you do for our family. And you don't want to get it to where they feel like you're just trying to make up things to say to them. I'm just saying we need to consider that sometimes we need to go a little further than what we do so that they understand that we really do appreciate. And then the very last one, because we're out of time, is remember those vows. Love and honor, better or worse, richer or poorer, sickness and health, till death do us part. So when some of this is just sitting on your last nerve, remember how you felt that day. Remember what took you to that point and how you felt hearing and exchanging those vows. It's all really a matter of perspective and thinking. Look before you leap, you know. Think before you speak.
And a decision.
It is a decision. A decision to be happy. You know, one of my favorite verses is Psalms, is it 114? This is the day which the Lord hath made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. He gave us this day. We will rejoice and be glad in it. He doesn't say if you feel like it. It's a commandment.
I like that.
So. And you say that every morning. It can change your whole day.
Yep.
Yes.
Anything about yesterday?
No. Just today. My basic philosophy is that Christians should be the happiest people on the face of the earth. And sometimes we're not, because we don't allow ourselves to choose happiness.
Even in adversity.
Right.
We need to realize of the joy that we may have because we are God's children.
Something good to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are highly blessed.
We are highly blessed.
Sometimes that's all you can do.
Yes. Okay, any other comments?
I think I've mentioned this before, but there was a read somewhere, a young person was asking about something.
It stands, don't tell me.
What have you done, or how have you stayed together so long after they've been married many, many years? And I think the man says, well, I came from a girl and something was broke. He fixed it.
Didn't replace
and throw it away.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so much can be fixed if people want to fix.
It can all be fixed.
It really can.
It's your attitude.
If both people are wanting to do what God tells them to do, it can be fixed. Now, I wouldn't want to experiment with it, but I have a belief that if two Christians decided to marry and they both were committed to being Christians, they could have a happy marriage. I like our system a little better that we get to choose, but I still think it would be possible.
Abby said we could choose who she marries.
Can we have a committee?
I know. I was like, she talked to me about that, and I was like, oh my, that's a maturity thing right now.
It is.
I don't know what that is.
Can we have a committee?
Yeah, that puts the pressure on.